In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss Magic and Whimsy in The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern, narrated by Jim Dale.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern and narrated by Jim Dale.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just love us so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Yay!
Hooray! Hooray! This is the last episode of season two.
Oh.
Not that that really means anything for anyone, even for us, really, but it kind of does.
It does. It does. It means we can change folders of things.
It does.
We can have a declutter.
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
That is an exciting prospect when you look at the folders.
Oh my gosh, I know. It's just, every time I go to edit an episode, I just scroll through. Like, here's another 52 plus episodes, however many weeks we had between September and now.
It's very exciting, though.
Yeah.
I'm nearly at my... Well, technically, I've been with the show for a year now.
Yes.
Because that anniversary was the 15th of September.
Yes.
But I had a couple of weeks prep.
Right. I didn't force then, you into it at my
no,
point.
Is it next... Almost. And then... Is it next week or the week after will be a year?
Yeah, you came on October 9th.
So this is episode 51 for me. Have I officially done more than the other one?
Yes, because I did one by myself.
You did two.
Well, yeah, but the second one was the first episode of season two. I did that one by myself. Did I do any others by myself?
Excellent.
Just the space one? Just the loneliest girl in the podcast?
Which was completely appropriate. Well, very sorry. Sad by you. As I sat demented at work once. Edit all that out,
yikes,
you.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah.
10 minutes of complete waffle.
Yeah.
So, what? Right, start again from season two, three, four.
This is the last episode of season two. Not that that really means anything for anyone but us, but still, this is...
I'm excited for the declutter, and I'm excited for season three, because we do have a few changes.
We do have a couple of changes.
Subtle
changes.
Yeah.
Special things for listeners, if they give us money. Cold hard cash gets you Fictional Hangover things.
Stuff.
Hooray for Patreon!
But also, don't forget fictionalhangover.redbubble.com.
That's true. That's true. And coffee. KO-FI.com. You can just give us money for funsies. There. just give it to us because you like us. Not that you will get anything in return.
Respect?
Admiration.
Respect is harder. Respect is more double figures into trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, we need more for respect.
I'm still waiting for the Waffle House CEO. That's the dream.
I know. One day. But that day is not today.
No, sadly, it is not. Shall we discuss The Night Circus rather than...
I don't know. I'm feeling like emotional about the end of my second year of podcasting. Like it's kind of a big thing.
It's huge. You've done an episode every week for 2 years. Yeah.
That's a lot. And it's not stopping now.
No, we can't. We have a lot of plans.
We do. We have so many plans.
And if you heard or watched the live episode, you will be privy to some of those plans.
That's true. You can always go back and watch it again. It's pinned to the top of our Facebook page for now.
Yes. We weren't dressed up for that one, though.
No.
Not like
now. Not like today. I am recording this, you know, on Zoom. But really, I shouldn't, because the option for having video episodes or just watching us while we're doing this or after the fact does not come until Patreon starts.
No, but it does give you fodder, visual fodder if it's needed for blackmail purposes. Why am I thinking that?
I don't know. Anyway, more about that. More about season 3 next week.
When it starts.
Let's finish up season 2 first, okay?
Yes. I'm very excited for this one. Very, very excited.
Yeah, me too.
Do you have any background information or any wonderful, weird, wacky tidbits?
I have background information.
Gimme.
It's taken from the FAQ section of Aaron Morgenstern's website, aaronmorgenstern.com.
I like an FAQ.
Yeah, me too. So she was asked, did the Night Circus really start as a National Novel Writing Month project? And I thought this would be timely to talk about NaNoWriMo because it's, you know, it's getting close to that time. And if you do NaNoWriMo, you've probably already been thinking about your project that you're going to start. So this is just inspiration, really. If you do complete a NaNoWriMo project, it could become a huge, giant thing like the Night Circus did.
Can we explain what NaNoWriMo is? Because I actually had only heard of it last year, the year before, and that's because of listening to another podcast.
Yes.
Where the host participated. So it's not like, I don't think it's very well known, but it might interest some listeners.
Yes, so NaNoWriMo is the abbreviation for National Novel Writing Month, which takes place in November. And there's a fantastic website where you can sign up for free to get your ideas out there. You can share things with other writers. And it's a fun thing to try to do. It's a very nice challenge to write 50,000 words, at least. So in quotes, a novel during the month of November. I've done it before. And won. In 2009. Ooh. Winning is just completing your novel.
It's good motivation for anybody who's aspiring or just need that push or just wants a bit of fun, yeah, but has a lot of ideas.
Yes, there are lots of resources on their website, and there are programs for children to do it as well. It's called the Young Writers Program, and there's lots of fun writing prompts and different activities and workbooks you can download and fill out with all of your character information and your plot devices and all sorts of things like that. It's really just a lot of fun. Don't take it too seriously.
And you don't have to do it by yourself either. If you want to do like a writing team, it's a great idea. Right. I really, really want to do it, but I can't commit myself this year because of university. Mm-hmm. But next year, I might do it then because my dissertation deadline is September.
So you'll be free.
So I won't have those deadlines and those commitments hanging over my head. So I might start getting the juices going. Because actually, we have talked about like story ideas before. Yeah. And then we had a freaky moment when we realised we were along the same lines.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Both of us, the concepts were like 15, 20 years old as well. Like they were old concepts.
Yes. Yes, mine's not quite that
I wanted to do this for a long time. I'm ancient. I'm decrepit. Yeah. I don't use foundation. I use cement.
Yeah.
Wrinkles.
Yeah.
Don't agree.
I mean, no. What? You wear mecca? I can't even tell that you're wearing mecca. Oh my god.
I haven't done this for a while.
Don't put your finger down at me. I'm shocked.
I'm tethered.
I'm shocked. So anyway, let me finish talking about Aaron Morgenstern's journey with NaNoWriMo. Yes, the Night Circus really did start out as a National Novel Writing Month project. She tried for the first time in 2003 and failed, but succeeded in 2004. And in 2005, she started a project that she got bored with, and then she sent the characters to the circus, and that circus was immediately much more interesting than anything else that she had ever done. So she spent the next 2 years of Nana writing exploring that imaginary circus. It went through a great many changes between that double Nano draft and the finished version. An example, that entire 100,000 words worth of original circus stuff, Celia wasn't even in it.
What?
I know. It's crazy.
Seriously.
It's crazy. So, NaNoWriMo is a brilliant idea that gives you two magical things. Company and a deadline. Before
everybody loves everyone, a deadline. They may not like it. They might say they don't,
but they do. They do. Mm. So, before Nano, she was the sort of person who would write a page and hate it, so she'd stop. But really, you really need to keep going and write more pages. And Nano is a wonderful way to learn that. So, try it out. Give it a try. And then maybe one day we'll be talking about your book on the show.
And if you're published, we'll have you on the show.
We will.
And then you get a bonus episode.
Yeah. And hey, if you're looking for an audiobook narrator, I would love to read your book.
Perfect package. Publication and audiobook.
Novel. Indeed. That's a lot of stuff. How many minutes have we been recording? Like 48? So what are your initial thoughts of this one?
Finally! I have had my beautiful hardback edition with the black pages, the red ribbon, and if I take the dust cover off, you can hear me physically manipulating the book. It has the clock embossed in silver on the hardback.
Beautiful.
I have had this gorgeous, I mean, look at the inside, Amanda. Look, it's all top hat, the bowler hats, and then there's the odd red
one.
Beautiful.
I
have had this absolutely gorgeous edition book since it came out. Do you know when I read it?
Yesterday.
Last week. Now, I remember getting this for my birthday. My gorgeous darling husband took me to the bookshop and said, there's a basket, have fun. So I did. Many, many, many pounds later, this was one of the books I bought, well, he bought for me. And so I know it was bought on August 21st, 2011, if the publication is right. Did I get the publication right?
I believe it is 2011, yeah.
Yeah. So I even know the date it was bought. I know the location it was bought. It doesn't exist anymore because it was a Borders bookshop. And I've had it since then. And it's been on my shelf. And I've never read it. I keep meaning to. But there's always something else that comes up and something else that comes up. And this is why this podcast is brilliant. Because it forces me to read these books that I've been wanting to read for a long, long
Fantastic.
Time. Cough. Vampire Academy.
Cough. It's coming!
It's coming. So I finally got a chance to read it. And I am absolutely kicking myself because it's bloody brilliant. And I feel like I've missed out on 10 years of magical, whimsical wonderfulness.
Yeah, you really have.
I have. But now I'm dressed up as a Revere. I butchered the French language, I'm sorry. And I'm loving it.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad you finally read it. I can't remember my initial thoughts because I read it when it came out. And I also bought a beautiful hard copy of it that I lent to my mother and she has yet to return it. One day. But yes.
This is when you'll have to just go home and forcibly remove it.
I know. I'm going to have to do that.
You need to make a list of all the stuff that you're going to have to forcibly remove from the property.
I know. So, anyway, I read it back then. I did not listen to the audiobook, but I did listen to the audiobook this time, most of it. I flipped between reading it and listening to it.
I'm going to get into the audiobook discussion when we
Yes, I need to get into that properly as well. But let's not talk about that right now.
No, it's too early.
Let's just start the summary. The circus arrives without warning. Le Cirque de Rêve, the circus of dreams. Much like a dream, this story will not make much sense until it is over. It jumps around in time quite a bit, so bear with us, please, because summarizing that is weird. Sometime before the arrival of the circus, Celia, a 5-year-old, arrives at the home of Hector Bowen, or Prospero the Enchanter, as he is sometimes called, and you have to say it like that, with a note pinned to her jacket. She is his daughter, and when her accidentally shattered teacup reforms itself by magic, he is pleased. Hector has a proposition for another man, Alexander, or the man in the gray suit. A game. Hector introduces Celia, and the man in the gray suit agrees to the game, though he'll have to find a player. And he does, at an orphanage, a small boy of 9 named Marco. For years, the two train with their mentors for the game, but they train very differently.
Marco meets a girl, Isabel, in the streets 10 years later. She has retrieved a notebook he dropped, and upon returning it, the two stop at a pub where they talk about what is in the notebook, spells and such. Isabel reveals that she reads tarot, and then, when they leave the pub, he shows her real magic, taking them out of the rainy street and into a sunny forest where they I know. Later, he reads her mind in his flat as he tries to teach her simple magic. The man in the grey suit arrives and tells him he will be applying to work with man as a preliminary to the game. Chandresh Lefer, who will be the one who will set the stage for the competition. He also says that Marco should not have any distractions, referring to Isabel. Celia, meanwhile, is forced to work as a medium, swindling people out of their money, and she hates it. Hector barely allows her to eat. He breaks her wrist, yells at her to stop crying, and leaves. Not a parent of the year award material.
No, indeed not.
Yeah. Later, at another time, a boy of 10, Bailey, is dared to go into the night circus during the day when it is closed and brings something back. He sneaks in despite the warnings of exsanguination and meets a girl with bright red hair, dressed all in white. She tells him to leave, but gives him a white glove to show his friends. Love the threat of exsanguination.
Me too. It's fantastic.
Just gonna throw it out there.
There is no exsanguination at all, ever. Not even halfway mentioned anytime throughout the rest of the book. It's perfect.
It's just for lols. It's circus jokes.
Marco goes to work for Chandresh, who often has elaborate dinner parties at midnight. Here, they begin planning the night circus. One evening, a contortionist arrives. She is covered in tattoos and can do the most amazing tricks. She joins the circus. A man named Herr Friedrich Thiessen makes a clock for the circus. It's beautiful and black and white and gray and does elaborate things as each hour chimes. Elsewhere, Hector dies. And ooh. Celia reads through letters of condolence. She changes all the flowers received to roses and magically sets some of the letters on fire. As you do. She opens one that simply reads, "Your move." Celia then goes to audition for the circus. Chandresh is not impressed as they are seeking illusionists, not lovely assistants. But she is an illusionist, trained under her father, Hector Bowen, Prospero the Enchanter.
Say it properly.
Prospero the Enchanter!
Thank you.
She transforms her jacket into a raven, Marco's notebook into a dove, her green dress into an elegant black and white one to match the circus theme, and her brown hair to nearly raven black. She's hired, of course, immediately.
Imagine not being hired.
That would suck. Like, fuck you guys. And then she sets the building on fire and leaves.
Oh, we're like the guy who pulled the rabbit out of a hat. Did cartridges. Marco realizes Celia is his opponent immediately and talks to Isabel about it. And together they decide that the circus is the setting for the game. Isabel reads her cards, asking if Celia is pretty and if she's more powerful than Marco.
Ooh.
Isabel offers to help him by working for the circus and sending him letters. He is not supposed to leave London to travel with the circus because he's Chandresh's personal assistant, and so will have to work his magic from afar, if the circus is indeed the setting. It is. And he is worried. In a later time, Bailey, the boy with the glove, now several years older, is told he must stay at home to mind the farm instead of going to Harvard. His grandmother wants him to follow his dreams and go to college, but really, he only has one dream. To find the red-headed girl from the circus who gave him the white glove. Didn't exsanguinate it. But the circus has gone, it's been gone for years. He climbs the old tree where they used to sit and watch the circus when he was a boy. Only to see that it has returned.
Gasp!
Yay!
Gasp! Back in time, the very first opening night arrives and everything goes beautifully, especially the lighting of the bonfire to kick things off. 12 archers each shoot an arrow into the fire on their chime of the clock, and the flames change colors with each new arrow, ending with brilliant white flames in the cauldron. Turns out Marco was responsible for the magical flames. A great way to start the competition, he thinks. The only thing that happened that was unexpected that night was the birth of the wildcat tamer's wife's twins, Winston and Penelope, who were not expected quite yet. They're given the nicknames Widget and Poppet. Widget is given black clothes, Poppet white, and shockingly for everyone involved, they both have bright red hair. Celia missed the lighting of the bonfire, but she felt it and wonders what she should do to retaliate. Chandresh also feels the lighting, almost as if he is tied to the circus as well.
Bailey enters the circus again, hoping it will be as wonderful as he remembers, afraid that it won't be. And it is still fantastic, of course. He's looking for the redhead girl in white, but there's no way he'll find her. He resigns himself and watches several performances. The contortionist fits herself into a tiny glass box and disappears. The illusionist sets a chair on fire, makes doves randomly appear, and transforms her coat into a swathe of silk into a top hat. After the performance, he finds a woman that appears to be made of snow and ice on a platform, reading in memoriam.
Celia spends some time exploring a new tent, the ice garden. It's beautiful. She also watches the twins, who seem to have seer abilities. One sees the past, the other the future. Celia gets the idea that the magic in the circus gave them these powers. Later, she asks the engineer, Mr. Ethan Barris, to build a carousel that she brings to life. It is spectacular, but Hector, who appears to be a ghost, disapproves. Marco, meanwhile, seems to not really like Isabel anymore. She never gives him enough details in the letter she sends about Celia and the circus. She has, however, woven a bracelet made of their hair, which he surreptitiously disappears. He asks her about a new addition to the circus, a living tree full of candles called the Wishing Tree. He summons the man in the gray suit, who disapproves. Neither of the players understand the game. And do you know why that is? Because you didn't tell him any fucking thing about it. Frustration!
The clockmaker, Herr Thiessen, visits the circus when it goes to France. He is proud of his clock and begins to make more like it. He would love for the circus to go to Germany, so he writes to Chandresh. Marco replies vaguely to his letter. Soon there is another of Chandresh's midnight dinners. Celia goes for the first time since the circus opened and talks to Marco. Later, the clockmaker receives an invitation to the circus when it's nearby and begins to write about his visits, which leads them to being included in social papers, then shared worldwide. He becomes the leader of the reverse, the fans of the circus, aficionados. They even begin dressing in black and white and grey like the circus folk, but add a bit of red so they all can recognise each other. He gets letters from other aficionados and writes back often. He receives a letter from someone he does not recognise in New York, a Miss Bowen. Who do we know of that name?
Who indeed? Marco visits Mr. Barris, asking what he knows of the circus. He reveals that Celia told him that what she does is real. Ooh. He says he used to provide his engineering feats to help magicians make their work seem real, but now he does the opposite. He agrees to not share any information and to help Marco construct things too, without telling Celia. Mr. Barris agrees and will not take sides. He creates something for Marco, and later, Celia writes him to ask if she can add to it. Yes, he replies, this creation was made for both of them. They each keep adding rooms to a tent and create the labyrinth.
Ooh. Ooh. Tara Burge is one of the ones who helped design the beginnings of the circus and who frequently helps with it along with her nearly identical sister Lainey, talks to Mr. Barris about whether or not he feels he lives in a dream. It seems she feels this way. He gives her a card for a Mr. A.H., which is the man in the grey suit, and he says he may be able to help, but if he will or not, who can say?
The circus is closed one night due to inclement weather. Celia takes her umbrella and goes to a local tea shop and sits with Isabel. Isabel reads tarot for her. The cards reveal that Celia is in a competition and will meet her competitor soon. The door of the shop opens and closes with no one seen arriving. Must be the inclement weather. Celia leaves soon after, now with a magical umbrella that keeps her dry and warm. Marco chases her down, saying that he believes she has his umbrella. Oh, ho, ho! Now she knows for sure. Marco is her opponent. He asks if she'd like to go for a drink. She disappears instead.
Rejected.
Magically rejected.
Oh, if only we all had that power. Back at the circus with Bailey, he visits the fortune teller and asks her name. How thoughtful Isabel thinks. She reads his cards. He wants to know if he should go to college or stay on the farm. She tells him vague things about travel that he doesn't really follow. She knows that he is looking for Poppet. Less vaguely, she sends him in her direction. Meanwhile, Widget tells Poppet a story about a wizard who gives a girl his secrets. She has magic now and traps the wizard in a tree, but eventually she loses her magic. The wizard grows into the tree and into immortality. He lives forever as the girl ages. What an interesting tale.
Tara goes to see the man in the grey suit about the circus and how she's losing her connection with reality. He convinces her that she needs to find something else to occupy her time and leads her to her train. He disappears and reappears on the opposite side of the station, across the tracks from her, and is arguing with a man that looks similar to him, but transparent. She steps closer to see the two, but does not see the train. We have a moment of silence for Tara. Near this time, Celia meets with Herr Thiessen in Germany when the circus travels there. They have dinner and a delightful conversation about books. They walk around his shop, looking at clocks. She places her hand on a broken clock that he has given up trying to repair, and now it runs perfectly. They go to the circus together later, separating on arrival, but he goes to see her perform. They spend several evenings together as companions. But then she gets news from London. At Tara's funeral, Tsukiko, the contortionist, postulates that the circus is controlling their lives. No one within the circus has gotten sick or died, apart from Tara, or had children, apart from the twins. Once you begin to remove yourself, however, you can see the big picture and things begin to change. A living statue called the Snow Queen stands over Tara's grave. In memoriam, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Bailey finds Poppet and they and Widget walk around the circus. They tell him that they can see the past and the future, and that's how Poppet knew his name all those years ago when she gave him the glove. They give him a silver ticket to return to the circus as many times as he wants. He thinks, after going home, that he is finally becoming who he's supposed to be. Switching back to the other timeline, after a midnight dinner at Chandrasha's, everyone is leaving. Celia cannot find her shawl. Marco has it, and requests the drink they didn't have when they met in the rain. They talk of the competition, that they don't understand it, and think of it more as a duel of exhibition instead. They reveal that they were trained in very different ways, Celia by pain and force, Marco by books and indifference. He gives her a tour of Chandrasha's mansion. They display some of their talent and talk about the circus. They have a powerful connection, especially when they touch. Celia disappears again, forgiving Marco for stealing her shawl, and purposefully leaves it behind.
Ooh. 3 years after this, there's a celebration of the circus's 13th anniversary. It is at Chandrasha's, and most everyone from the circus is there in bright rainbow colors. Isabel is following Marco around, besotted, but he only has eyes for Celia. Chandrasha gives a rousing speech and mentions how no one seems to be getting any older, except for the twins. And then everyone kind of forgets what he was saying, conveniently.
He's the eccentric rich guy. Of course, everybody ignores him.
Of course. The man in the gray suit is there, and when Marco and Celia sneak away, he follows. He tells Marco that they shouldn't be together. One of them will eventually have to win because the game won't stop until this happens. He says he quits, but that's not possible. He storms away into the middle of the dance floor where he kisses Celia, then makes everyone forget what they just saw. Then he leaves. The man in the gray suit also leaves, and the twins notice he has no shadow.
What?
What?
In Bailey's time, he returns and explores the circus more. He finds a tent that doesn't really look like he's supposed to go inside, but it has a tiny sign reading bedtime stories, so he goes in. The tent is full of jars and boxes of bedtime stories, or really, the stories of people that Widget has talked to. Opening them, he experiences snippets of these stories. Later, after the twins have their performance training kittens, he and Poppet play hide and seek in the ice garden. Chandrasha is losing his memory and his purpose. He's drinking all the time. He goes into Marco's office and looks through all his things about the circus, but it don't really make sense. He breaks open a locked drawer that contains a book. The book has the signatures of everyone involved in the circus and a lock of their hair. While he's snooping, Marco comes in. Chandrasha fires him and Marco says he can't leave, but then Chandrasha forgets all about everything. Marco packs some things and leaves for the night. Chandrasha remarks that he has no shadow. Then he talks to the ghost of Prospero, who helps him remember some things.
Lainey goes to see Mr. Barris, who explains what he can of the circus, how his engineering feats are magically enhanced by Marco and Celia. Then she talks to Celia and explains to her that people aren't as easily mended as the teacups that she can just break and repair whenever she chooses, and that she should ask for help if she needs it, because there are more people involved that could get hurt. You know, like her sister, who got hit by a train. Celia and Marco want to leave the competition so they can be together, and they don't want anyone else to get hurt. But they find that if they even plan to leave the circus, they feel such immense pain that they can't bear it. Looks like they're stuck. A little later, Celia talks to the man in the gray suit, but it is unknown what is said. In Bailey's time, Poppet visits him and asks him to come away with them when the circus leaves and is afraid that, if he doesn't, the circus won't last. She's seen it in the stars. In all her time in the circus, nothing has ever gone amiss. But when they were exploring earlier, they kind of almost got stuck in a room in the labyrinth. Luckily, Bailey found a key, which means he's got to be important. She kisses him before she leaves, and he knows that he'll follow her anywhere. Maybe this is what his tarot cards were showing him to do with his life. Not college, not staying on the farm, running away to join the circus.
On Halloween, Marco tells Isabel what she has been fearing. He doesn't love her. He never loved her. He wishes he could have, but he loves Celia. She removes from a box a bowler hat that she has tied with ribbons and the tarot card Marco pulled so long ago, a binding. She realises everything about the circus has been about Celia and Marco. They're doing everything for each other and she has been helping to keep the balance. She's done. So she undoes her binding. Then she hears Poppet scream. Moments before this, Chandresh, shambling, follows Alexander, you know, Mr. A.H., the man in the grey suit, through the circus. Chandresh hasn't been in some time. The man in the grey suit has never been. Chandresh throws a knife at the man in the grey suit, but at the last moment, he steps aside. The knife burrows itself into the chest of Herr Thaysen instead. Everything stutters, and Poppet screams, and we have to put the book down for a moment because, oh my god.
Yeah, yikes. Yikes at that part. We need to take another moment. So sad.
Every death hits hard in this book.
I know. And he loved the circus so much.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Terrible. All right. Bailey is following his true dream and sneaks out to leave with the circus. But by the time he's able to leave, the circus is nowhere to be seen. That's odd. Did it leave early?
Prospero
and the man in the gray suit have an argument about who will win and who has chosen a student they will not become attached to and are not afraid to lose. When Celia spoke to the man in the gray suit earlier, she invited him to the circus, hoping to end the competition. She and Marco are frustrated with the game. She tells Marco things are out of balance because of Isabel, and clearly bad things are happening now. She tried to save Herr Thaysen, the clockmaker, and her friend, but couldn't. All those times of cutting up her fingertips and healing them and breaking her wrists and healing them was not enough. While she was attempting to save her friend, Marco was chasing Chandresh. They talk about how they don't want to do the competition anymore and what is going on with their instructors. Marco hasn't had much to do with the man in the gray suit for years. Celia says Hector tried to do a spell that got rid of his physical form and it didn't go well. He's still tied to several places and to her, so he's not really dead, but he's pretty much a ghost. They finally sleep together because they just can't stand it any longer. When Marco wakes, Celia is gone, but has left her ring. She has also left with his safeguard, the Book of Binding, the one with all the signatures and hair. Outside of Marco's flat, Hector is waiting. He calls Celia a slut and tells her she's pathetic and will never win, etc., etc., etc. She finally realizes that the game will only end when one of them dies. She asks what happened to the winner of the last challenge. Hector says she's currently tying herself in knots at the circus.
Ho, ho, ho!
On the circus train, Celia talks to Sukiko about the game. They talk about the circus continuing after the game is over and how Celia is tied to it and would be difficult to remove herself. Sukiko's competition was much less public and she can't really believe that they've let this one become as big as it has. Celia has to put so much of herself into it, it's difficult to determine what will happen because she is so intricately tied into it. Celia and Marco talked about this before, and it's why she took his book. The book he placed into the bonfire the very first night is the only thing tying him to the circus. but Celia has given a part of herself to everything she's put into it. Sakiko says if she stabbed Celia in the heart, the train would crash.
Please don't stab her in the heart.
No, please don't. Celia asks for Sakiko's help since she was the last winner, but she can't do that. She will take over if things get out of hand, though, and, you know, that might be done soon.
Bailey wanders around the field where the circus was, trying to figure out what to do. He runs to the train station, hoping to catch up with the circus before it leaves, but no luck. He sees a couple wearing bright red scarves and realizes they are probably following the circus. They invite him to join them and take him in, letting him stay with them and buying him a new suit. They tell him all about being reverse and how the circus has been off kilter since Herr Thiessen died 1 year ago. They head to New York. Shortly after Herr Thiessen's funeral, Celia tells Marco that the game will only end when one of them dies, that it is about endurance, not skill. She stole his book to learn how to take herself out of everything she's made because it's getting too difficult to run literally the entire circus with her magic. She wants to take herself out of the game and out of the world, too. Perhaps magically, like her father, or by suicide, like her mother. Marco wants to help her so they can be together because he loves her. He believes she doesn't trust him, though. She knows that his helping won't work, so she asks him to leave and not come back. Ooh. And we all weep silently for a moment.
Celia pours over Marco's book. Prospero appears, pestering her. She accuses him of sending Chandresh after the man in the grey suit and causing Herr Thiessen's death. She tells him she hates him. Meanwhile, Marco summons the man in the grey suit and tells him that Celia believes one of them has to die. He says she is correct. Marco asks why the man in the grey suit would do this to him. His response? Because it's better than the life he might have had otherwise. Later, Poppet and Widget talk to Celia. Poppet is worried because she has seen the circus on fire and Celia with Marco. Though the twins don't know who he is. In Poppet's vision, Celia is there, but then she isn't there, but she is at the same time. It's very confusing. Then, after the fire, Bailey is there. Poppet believes this is going to happen soon, but it can't possibly because they are headed to New York. Marco is in London, and Bailey didn't join the circus. Celia won't let anything bad happen to them and immediately begins to practice setting things on fire without letting them burn.
Just throw some more of yourself into the circus there, Celia. It's fine.
What could happen?
Bailey and his reverse friends arrive in New York. He is one of them now and was given a bright red scarf. Another reverse they're staying with tells them that the circus was closed the first night due to inclement weather, which is odd. And there was a loud banging sound at midnight. Bailey takes off running. The timelines are finally meeting now. Isabel meets up with Marco and tells him that he and Celia would have had a chance. It was all in the cards she read for a young man, but her timing was off. Her timing is always off. She blows something like black ash into his face, and he disappears. Bailey arrives at the circus. The gates are closed, and he's much bigger now than he was at 10 when he snuck in the first time. He climbs a tree and jumps the fence, but sees no one. He expected to find Poppet, but instead found Tsukiko. She is acting as an emissary to take him to a meeting. She tells him if he had arrived earlier, things would have gone differently. There was a fiery explosion at the bonfire, but none of the tents were damaged.
Marco is transported to the circus by the ash. He is greeted by Sakiko, who sent Isabel to retrieve him. Everyone else is at the inclement weather party. She lets him know that she was a student of Alexander, who she thinks is not pleased by the circus. She won the last game, or survived it, 83 years ago.
Whoa, sheesh.
Yeah. Yeah, she's looking good.
She is looking hot for
I wish I'm going to be that bendy at 83 plus years old. Wow. Balls in on herself. Man. She won, air quotes, when her opponent, who, like Marco and Celia, was also her lover, but set herself on fire. Ah, which is also what Celia is planning to do.
Yeesh.
This is not good. They go to the bonfire. Celia arrives, but Sakiko tries to send her away. She struggles with the circus because it makes her remember her lost love. So, like she told Celia a year ago, she's going to end it with Marco's sacrifice.
Ooh.
As she's about to blow him up, Celia grabs him, holds him tightly, saying to trust her, and he does. The explosion is huge, and afterward, there is nothing but falling rain in the cauldron.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Celia pulls herself back together inside her tent, but it is oddly transparent, and she is alone. Marco is nowhere. Celia can transport herself anywhere within the circus, or is she moving the circus around her? She can't feel or touch anything. Marco arrives in the transparent ice garden. He also can't touch anything. Then Celia appears there too and says she loves him. He reaches out to touch her and is relieved when he can. Whew! Worried. Was worried about that. She uses the circus as a touchstone. So they are there, but not there. Kind of like Marco's journal or when Prospero accidentally deleted himself, but kind of better. But the ice garden begins to melt. The bonfire has gone out and Celia's having trouble holding the entire circus together. She doesn't know what will happen to everyone if she lets go.
Bailey goes to the ice garden and sees Marco in there, but he is transparent. Sukiko was going to imprison him inside the bonfire, but Celia caused this to happen instead. Marco leads Bailey to the wishing tree through the acrobat's tent where the inclement weather party was happening before the explosion. Everyone is currently suspended. At the tree, Bailey meets Celia, who asks him to take over the circus, but most importantly, she gives him the choice that she and Marco never had. Thankfully, he agrees. He will always choose the circus. Marco binds Bailey to the circus by burning Celia's silver ring into his palm. And now to relight the bonfire. Bailey gathers materials, a pocket watch, yarn, two cards, one tarot, one playing card, a certain book, and Sukiko's lighter. He wraps the book with the cards and the yarn and the watch and puts them in the cauldron along with some other things. His silver ticket, a rose, his bedtime story bottle that he got from Widget, and Marco's bowler hat. He lights the fire and the circus flickers back to life.
Poppet goes to Chandresh's to get him to sign over the circus to Mr. Barris and Lainey. He does this without complaint. Then Poppet gives him a black and white kitten to keep him company. They look over the blueprints in his house that become plans for a museum. Chandresh feels better than he has in years. Widget meets with a man in the gray suit. They talk of stories and of Marco and Celia. The man in the gray suit hopes that Marco and Celia will eventually be able to go on one day. Widget is there to obtain his part of the circus, and his payment is a story. The story of the circus. Widget begins as this book begins. The circus arrives without warning. Widget's been telling the story the whole time.
It's Widget's been telling the story. Oh my god.
Whoa.
That was a superior ending to the book.
It was indeed. Mm-hmm. So good. So good. And it was a NaNoWriMo project. Anyone can do it. Should be inspiring to me.
It's an inspiring book.
Gosh, it's so pretty.
It's just delightful in every way. Yeah.
I love whimsical stories so much. And we don't do a lot of whimsy on the show.
We really haven't. And I was bemoaning that fact to myself the other day, which is why I made a certain suggestion for future episodes. Plus, it is a favourite book. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It was magical. It was honestly magical. I didn't know if I was going to enjoy it or not, because I thought, oh, surely I would have picked it up by now. Surely. Yeah, no, I'm just dumb. That's the only answer.
You must be.
I must be. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I'm glad that we covered it and we covered it for the book club challenge. Not a traditional classic.
Oh, it's a classic for sure, though.
Well, it's a modern classic. Because it's only 10 years old, this is a story that will very much be able to stand the test of time. And there's a lot of themes that could, you know, in theory, could be discussed within a school setting as well. Yeah. Could be a better book than some of the books I covered at school. So we didn't want to go down the all-school classic route because
I hate those.
I hate them.
That's what made me lose my love of reading in high school, was being forced to read those. So let's not do that.
Exactly. So, and you know what we're like with the themes. It can be as tenuously linked to them as you want.
We make up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So that's why we covered it. It's just a beautiful book. There's just so much beautiful imagery comes from it. Like, my favourite artist is Abigail Larson. I adore everything she produces. And I actually have a print on my wall called The Night Circus, which is inspired by The Night Circus. Yeah, I've never read the book yet.
I can't believe that you hadn't read it.
I can't believe I hadn't read it.
I can't believe it.
I'm annoyed with myself. Honestly.
You were saving it. You were saving it just for me.
I must have.
It's fate.
It's the only. It is.
Our timelines are finally lining up.
Have we merged?
Aww.
Our timelines have merged.
Aww, yay.
At last. At last. The podcast arrives without one.
Oh, what a nice time for this too, as it's the end of season two and it's about time when you started, and it's just magic. All of it's magic, and I'm getting weepy. Oh my goodness. I'm not really getting weepy. That was pretend.
No. You've been a bit extra. It's all a bit extra.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Not at all. We're dressed up to record an audio podcast again. Come on.
We're going to have to start doing it every time when we make these videos available for people to watch, but we're going to have to start getting a lot better at recording without going, hey, I gotta go pee for 20 minutes and eat a snack.
Hey,
and I'm gonna come back later.
If nature calls, nature calls.
Ew, stop it. Don't go down. Don't do it. Don't go down that path.
No,
stop
whimsy,
it. Stop
whimsy,
it.
Whimsy, magic and magic. Whimsy and magic.
Yes.
That needs to be on a t-shirt now, doesn't it? Magic and whimsy.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Magic and whimsy and not watching people pee.
Let's reassess that. Maybe cut that in half.
Not watching people pee. Is all right, there it is.
It's a sticker.
Anyway. Yes.
Right, so, yeah. Favourite moments.
Everything. Absolutely
page
everything.
Page 1 to end.
Yes.
I adored
it. It's so beautiful.
I'm going to bring in a little discussion about the audiobook at this point.
Okay.
Because it's relevant to favouritism and liking and stuff, positivity. I did start listening to The Night Circus as the audiobook narrated by Jim Dale. And I was really looking forward to it because I've not actually heard Jim Dale as a narrator. Mm. But you really rate him within the Harry Potter series, because in the UK, it's Stephen Fry who reads our Harry Potter books. And he's got a delightful reading voice. It is beautiful. It serenaded me to the point where I couldn't remember what he said.
He's made of magic himself.
He's made of magic. He and Steve West need to join forces on this app that will help lull people into a sense of calmness and well-being.
Do you know, I'm pretty sure that Steve West actually has something like that now.
Where's our royalties?
I know, really.
We have Twitter exchanges timestamped as proof. Where's my lawyer?
We need to do some investigating.
So, yeah, anyway, Jim Dale's voice is made of dreams and whimsy. Mm-hmm. It's perfect for this book. Mm-hmm. But it was not perfect for me.
You just got lost in it.
I had to stop listening to the audiobook and pick up the book. And I've had the book for 10 years. Let's read the book. So I was reading the book and I was like, I do not remember hearing this. What? The bonfire scene was magnificent. I didn't hear it.
Oh, it was so good.
It was amazing how much, as I was reading the book, there was like two scenes I can particularly remember. Chandresh, when he's throwing the knife at the review, which makes him think about doing the night circus. And the funeral scene, Tara's funeral. Those are the two things I actually remember from the audiobook. And they are very
pretty big gap in between those two.
I don't remember any of the other audiobook narration. I was hypnotized, which is worrying because I was listening to it as I was like driving around and doing some like shopping and getting some bits of, you know, just those. I spent a day doing the outside chores and I don't remember it. And I'm like, I know I drove safely, but I don't remember the audiobook. So I actually had to put it down and pick the book up. So this is one of the instances where I'm preferring the physical copy over the audiobook. But I would really rate the audiobook to introduce it to other people who aren't particularly fans of audios, because it is so well done.
Yeah.
And I think the other point of why I felt it was easier for me to read the book is the time jumps.
Yeah.
I did spend a lot of time. I was reading the chapter and I'd put my finger in the page at the chapter beginning. So when I started the next one, I could quickly check back the location and the date and go, right, okay, so this is 3 years future. This is 10 years past. I'm in America now. Now I'm in France. So I could get my bearings a little bit more. And obviously with an audiobook, you don't have that option.
Yeah, it's harder to go back and start the chapter over again.
It is. I mean, you can bookmark it, I suppose, and then quickly nip back, but it breaks the rhythm. Yeah. It was much easier to do as a book. So I enjoyed my whimsical printed book version this time, which is very different for us. Usually it's yay audiobooks, but in this instance, I recommend it, but I had to change mediums.
I have a confession as well about the audiobook. I read a lot of this one as well because I listen to the Harry Potter audiobooks at night when I can't sleep. So Jim Dale puts me to sleep. I wake up in the middle of the night from having nightmares, which happens a lot. And I put on Harry Potter and I'm able to go back to sleep. And it's like Jim Dale is there giving me a hug, like patting me on the head, telling me it's okay and putting me to sleep. So I was also hypnotized, but I love it. I did listen. I mean, I listened to most of it. I listened throughout the day and then I would read at night, you know, swapping back and forth. So I was able to continue doing it. I didn't have to completely put the audiobook away, but I don't know. Jim Dale makes me feel safe.
He's a hug in the ears.
He is. He's an ear hug.
It's a delightful voice he has. It's just...
Also, another confession about Jim Dale. kind of zoning out a little bit.
Safe space.
Yes.
This is a safe space.
Occasionally, when I would read, you know, like read the actual book, I would go back and listen, like, just listen to that chapter over again or part of it, just, you know, because why not? It's so great. But I found myself going, wait, is that Voldemort? Wait. Wait. Like,
what yeah, the man in the greatest suit is Voldemort.
Yeah.
Was it all a bit too serious?
It was not serious. But yeah, I just kept like hearing Harry Potter characters in my head. Like, oh, well, it's magic.
Yeah. It's magic.
Yeah.
He's a good gateway narrator.
Yeah. And he's so talented. He's so talented. It's brilliant.
Very.
All right, we've spent enough time talking about Jim Dale. Did you have any other favorite parts? Should we get back?
Apart from the whole book.
Pull something out of it, can you? Can you? Okay. One detail?
No, I'm going to give you multiple. I'm going to praise the actual writing as well. It was so smart, so well written, that you had all these multiple threads, not just time, place, people, they were everywhere. And then they all came together beautifully and it was all wrapped up brilliantly. It was so smart, mm-hmm. so well done. It was so atmospheric, like the way she did the descriptions, they were simplistic in themselves. You know, it's not like reading a Tolkien where you've got 16 pages of describing what trees look like. You know, the smell of the caramel apple, toffee apples for me. Sorry, the toffee apples. and the chocolate popcorn. And yeah, I as I was reading, I just wanted to make some popcorn just so I had that, like,
yeah,
4D experience.
Yes.
It was beautifully done, and you could get the description of the bonfire, the lighting of the bonfire was beautiful, and I would love to see that. And you could, like, it was so well described that you could get the heat from the bonfire, you got the cold from the ice garden, you felt like that tingle in the air from the wishing tree, and it was just so well described and put together that you knew exactly what you were looking at.
Yeah.
But the thing is as well, it was a little bit like, you know, when Bailey's walking around and he's not too sure where he's going or which ways, what the tents are. You kind of know these tents are there, but you don't know where they are. You know there's an illusionist's tent,
yeah.
You know there's the fairground ride, and you know there's all these bits and pieces, but you don't actually get an idea of, like, a map in your head. All you know is there's the gates, there's the bonfire and the big tent, and then there's all these tents around.
You know, for all we know, they could be in different places every night.
There could be. But you didn't need it. It was just so well put together.
Yeah.
I really liked Celia's audition.
Oh, it was so great. I love when she showed up and they're like, we're not looking for beautiful assistants today, so... And she's like, ha ha! And then she whips off her coat and it turns into a bird. And they're like, oh, okay, never mind. Continue!
Who trained you? Dad.
Prospero! The Enchanter!
Prospero!
The Enchanter!
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Please. Do go on.
And Mark was like, it's like, dude, you're catching flies with your mouth.
Yeah, that was really great. That was...
There was just so many different scenes, though, really.
Yeah.
What about you?
I really liked all the midnight dinners.
Oh, I'd love to go to one of those midnight dinners.
Me too. I really liked the one where they all showed up in rainbow colors. And they were talking about how, like, oh, this is the 13th anniversary, and we're totally celebrating the 13th anniversary. And they're like, it's probably just because we kind of forgot that it was... that there was a 10-year anniversary, and we kind of just realized that we don't notice time passing. So it's the 13th.
Because we're not aging at all.
Yeah, because the time has stopped around us. So, yeah.
Let's not sit too long.
Oh, Marco's going to make us all forget. And then he does, and then it's fine. But I did like that one a lot. I liked that Celia... What?
Popping a widget, I'll give them
I know, they get their little orange kitties and they're so sweet. But I also liked Celia's color-changing dress. So she matched everyone she stood with, and it was beautiful. And they had their passionate kiss in the middle of the dance floor. It was just so pretty. Oh. I don't know. I love whimsy so much. I need all the whimsy.
Yeah.
I think we need to update next year's schedule and just have a whimsy month.
I was literally going to suggest the same thing.
I need whimsy.
You witch.
I needed witch.
Witch. We'll have to have a month of whimsy.
We are going to have a month of whimsy. I need it. I'm glad that you also like whimsy.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yes. Love it. Yeah. Love it.
I also like any time that Bailey was walking around the circus because it's kind of, you know, at the beginning of some of the chapters, which we didn't talk about in the summary, there are chapters where it's in second person. So you are walking around the circus and you see this and you do this and you watch this happen. Didn't talk about that because they're like half a page of anything. So it's not really important. But I felt like along with those chapters, whenever we're walking around with Bailey, it's like we're actually there. So Bailey's sneaking through these tents and going through the cloud maze and going through the labyrinth and going through the ice garden and visiting Celia's tent. I just felt like I was there with him. So I liked the Bailey chapters when we got to explore the circus a little bit more. Like as...
Which is part of the smart writing. Yes. Yeah. I like those bits as well because it was like insight into the Revers and Hairface, and because a lot of them were quotes from him as well when they were doing some of the snippets. But and then the descriptions of the tents, and it gave you that sense of place and purpose for the tents.
Yeah.
And then it was working out slowly that actually Celia's made this tent, Marco's made this tent, and they both had the hands in the labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just love it. I just love it so much.
Yeah.
I love it. I just need to like gaze off for a minute.
That's why I get that. Yeah.
Do you know, I know like we struggle with mentioning things that we don't like, which is going to change in season 3, but our least favorite moments and how we always feel like, oh, we're trashing the book if we say something that we don't like. But it's okay to not like things.
It's okay to not like books.
Right.
Everybody's got different tastes. If everybody liked the same thing, the world will be very boring.
Yeah. But I hated when Herr Thiessen died. Like,
God, I literally put the book down. I literally put it down on my lap and went, no! I had to whisper it because it was like 2 o'clock in the morning and I was still reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hated it.
Yeah, I hated it so much.
And Tara's death.
Yeah.
With the train.
Yeah.
And you know, as soon as you're walking in, she's walking into the train station with the man in the grey suit. And I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this. And then he's like, he disappears to the other platform and is obviously talking to
Prospero the Enchanter.
And I'm just thinking, stand where you are. Stand still, stand still, stand still. And I didn't know if her lack of attention was to blame or the man in the grey suit was to blame. Because I wouldn't put it past him to manipulate the situation to get rid of a troublesome person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, he told her to go. But it's like, did you tell her to go or did you, like, tell her to...
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she gets hit by the
train. It's like, you've got to be careful with your words. Yeah. It reminded me of...
The end of the Woman in Black? Because that's what it reminded me of.
Kind of.
That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, but I was thinking more of the Umbrella Academy. You know, Claire's character who can wish for things to happen and she can accidentally say the wrong thing. Mm. It's kind of like you've got to be very careful with your words. And it reminds me of something else that happens in another book, but for the life of me, I can't remember what it is. And you've got to be careful with the way you say it, otherwise people can fall in front of trains. And that's kind of what brought to mind at that scene. And I don't know if it was possibly because I've been watching said programme. But just be careful with the words because bad things can happen.
Yeah.
words have power. But it's just heartbreaking. Like, they were the two deaths that happened, and they were just absolutely wrenching. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised we didn't see a bit more of a spiral from Lainey after Tara's death, with them being twins. They kind of respected each other's individuality, yeah. though. And there was that lovely moment where she gives the eulogy, and she's like, I'm one half of a whole.
Yeah.
And then when she's talking to Mr. Barris later on, trying to like fathom out what's gone on, and you know, she's talking about her sister, and it's lovely sentiments.
Yeah, but it was heartbreaking.
Oh, absolutely wrenching. Absolutely wrenching.
Now we need to take a moment for our dear characters who have passed on.
Is this like in the Oscars when we do the in memoriam?
Yes.
Do we have to do an in memoriam for like the season two?
We might need to. Do I have to dress up as like a snow woman? Is it going to be the ice?
Snow queen with wings.
Yeah. Can be the ice statue.
The living statue. Ugh.
Okay. Anyway, that time has passed.
Favourite characters. Do we already know? Do we feel a bit obvious about this one?
I mean, we probably should, at least for one of my favourite characters, Herr Thiessen. But also, I really liked Tsukiko.
She was a very interesting
character. She was. She was always there. And we learn that, you know, she is also a student of Alexander. And Marco has all these books all over the place where he's written all of his spells and incantations and all of this stuff he's written out all over the place.
Yeah.
And then you remember that Tsukiko is covered in tattoos. So she's been writing all of her magic onto herself. And that's really cool. That's a really cool thing to think of. But
that surprised me, actually.
It did.
Like, I knew there was some, when she's described as having all these tattoos, I thought, well, and then when, you know, they describe the symbols, it's like, well, there's something there.
Yeah, but then you could I mean, her name is Tsukiko. It just could be a language that we don't know.
Possibly. But it just feels like it's one of those little tidbits of information that you're given really early on in the book. And I, like, put it at the back of mind, didn't think about it again. So then when it's revealed that she was a winner / student of the man in the grey suit, went, oh. You spend the entire time thinking there's more to this lady than face value. There's more to her.
Yeah.
And it didn't click. It honestly didn't click for me that she was his student and a past winner.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that, because you don't find out that she was the winner until the very end of the book.
The polar opposites, these discoveries, these pieces of information at these opposite ends of the book.
And it's just so, it's interesting to think, like, you know, you see Bailey watching her perform, and she tucks herself down into a tiny glass box and then disappears, and you're thinking, oh, what a cool bit of contortionist things she's doing. Oh, she's so talented.
Because she's disguised by the smoke.
Yeah, but no, she literally fucking disappeared because she's magic.
Yeah, so because great. Mr. Barris, once again, is using his engineering to hide the real magic. Yeah,
it's so great. So great.
Oh, it was really annoying because it was in plain bloody sight. I should have realised this. And I'm kicking myself that I didn't realise it, but that was one of the big surprises for me.
Wow.
Just going to link that in there for you.
That is great.
What about Marco / Celia? Do you have... Are either of those your favourite? Do you have a preference between either of them? Because...
I think that I like Marco over Celia, and I don't really know why. I like the idea of magic in books, because books are magical to me, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't like Marco's attitude. Like, we treat Isabel.
Yeah, that was a little rough. And he did apologize to her, at least. I mean, that doesn't really forgive the way he treated her.
No.
But at least he did say, I've known that I've been in love with Celia for a long time, and I should have told you, but I didn't.
Yeah. But to play devil's advocate, I'm not victim blaming in the relationship. Relationships are two persons in this instance.
Yeah.
And Isabel knew there was something not quite right with it. So she could have had that conversation with Marco.
Yeah.
Before the 13th anniversary.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you've been in this relationship for 13 some years.
And I feel like it wasn't really like a relationship, like, because they were so like distant. So I,
yeah.
You know, she's at the circus and he's stuck with Chandresh. Is it like whenever the circus comes to town, they get together, or, you know?
They're just pen pals.
They're pen pals. They're sexy
really rubbish pen pals. Not even sexy
no,
pen pals. I didn't get...
No,
apart from that first kiss and the fact that she basically moved into his house, into his flat.
And she made a hair bracelet.
And she made... Yeah, but that's not really sex. That's creepy.
Yeah.
That's serial killer, like, single white female, my crazy ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. So I married an ex-murderer.
Yeah, that's huge alarms.
Yeah.
Blaring.
Yeah. I probably, right if there. I had been Marco and I saw the hair bracelet, rather than just disappearing it, I would have been like, what the fuck is this? Excuse me.
I would be certainly questioning.
Excuse me.
About it.
But still, I like Marco. I think it also maybe goes back to the fact that I like male main characters. I like male protagonists.
I liked Celia. I thought, out of the two, like, his upbringing was neglect.
Yeah.
And hers was...
Pain.
Abuse.
Not great, either way.
It's not great either way, but for her to come out of that upbringing being quite as normal as she is, she removes herself from people, though. She's
mm-hmm.
like, she always keeps everybody at a distance.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt sorry for her for that, except obviously with Marco. I don't know if I prefer Marco or Celia over the other. For me, they're a pair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole story.
Yeah, but they never really felt like the main characters to me.
The circus is the main character, I feel like.
The circus is the main character, and everybody plays within it, which was quite strange, but I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I loved Widget and Poppet.
Yes, they're perfect. I love them.
Just delightful, like, they have this innocence about them, but they're really not at the same time.
And they have kittens.
They have kittens. And they embrace who they are.
Yeah.
And I suppose by extension, I quite like Bailey.
Yeah.
But Bailey wasn't in as much as...
Yeah, you don't get to see too terribly much of Bailey. I wonder, like, what they're up to now. Because, of course, the circus is still going, I'm sure.
Yeah, because at the end...
There's an email address.
Business card with his email
yeah.
address. So, it's still going. I want to go.
Yes, I would like to go to there as well.
Okay, I've said about my surprise was Mini Sakiko being the winner/student.
Yes.
Did you have anything... Was anything surprising to you?
I was really surprised that they were able to successfully give the circus away to Bailey. Like, the whole story is about this competition between the two of them, and one of them is going to have to win, and the other one's going to have to die. And it's just, it was very nice that they were able to, I mean, not super successfully, as they're kind of dead, both of them, but also kind of
no,
not.
No, they're physically formed.
Yeah.
Don't exist.
Yeah. So it wasn't like, it wasn't super successful, but it still was. I'm just glad that they were, or I was shocked that they were able to give it away and that the circus would still run without them being in it.
Can't really expand on the circus though too much. Or are they still able to give their power or manipulate the circus?
I'm sure they are. Because, I mean, without their magic, it wouldn't run. So they've got to still be able to add things and change things.
Yeah.
I believe that they are able to continue adding to it. And that's part of the magic.
Exactly. I wouldn't have been surprised if it had ended with either, well, probably more likely Celia being the one that goes incorporeal like a dad. Mm-hmm. And Marco lived. I wouldn't have been surprised if that's how it ended.
Yeah.
Because it kind of set it up that way with Bros Brody already being not dead.
Yeah, and also that scene with Poppet seeing the future and that Celia is there, but also kind of not there, but also there, but also kind of not there.
Yeah. I was kind of expecting like a bit of sweet ending.
Yeah. But now they're both there and kind of not there and also kind of there at the same time, so it's okay.
Yeah. It was nice.
Yeah. I have a question. Something that it came up several times throughout the text, but I couldn't really find any explanation for it. What's the deal with them not having shadows?
Yes! Why do I feel like the man in the grey suit gives some kind of explanation?
I don't think that he did. I even searched on the internet, and people were like, yeah, I don't know why they don't have shadows. And they just kind of glossed over it. There's got to be something...
Something linked to, like, the age or something like that. It's just... He's forgotten about the age.
Oh, yeah, something like that. He's just so... He's just so old that he doesn't have a shadow anymore. But like...
Why bother maintaining a shadow? It doesn't serve a purpose.
But also, that... Marco doesn't have a shadow.
Yeah, but Marco was trained by the man in the grey
suit. So he's just... Just get rid of your shadow, okay? That's your first lesson. Ready? Go. I was thinking that it might have something to do with them, like... doing like a teleportation sort of thing. Like they're not really there, but they are there. Another flickery back and forth sort of thing. Maybe it's like a projection.
Yeah.
But who knows? It's magic. That's the only thing that you need to worry about. Don't understand something? It's magic. Okay.
I constantly thought, is the man in the grey suit actually there? Like, you know the scene where Herr Thiessen gets... murdered by Chandresh. Yeah. And Chandresh is obviously
a skilled knife thrower, though.
A skilled knife thrower that's gonna go kill someone! And he's chasing him around the circus, and I'm like, he's not going to die because he's not there.
Yeah.
It's not there. He is projecting himself there because he is not going to leave his slippers and comfy sofa to go to the circus. Mm-mm. So I don't believe he's physically there. He's probably done what Prospero couldn't do. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, he's
and then
there,
it turns out actually he was there. Yeah. He just turned at the right time. Or the wrong time, because I think so.
Yeah.
And the overall, like, the games were just... How horrible is it that these two people have constantly got this battle, this exchange, but it's not them fighting it.
Yeah.
It's innocent kids, really, who at the start training from such a young age, and they're the ones who have to do the battle, and one of them is going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty bad. But then you think, how long have these guys been around? Because Tsukiko won 83 years ago.
And the longest battle was 30-something, nearly 40 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was Sekiko's battle. I think that was another one.
Yeah. So, how old are these guys? Old enough to not have shadows.
old enough not to have shadows, I kept expecting Widget to give some kind of Arthurian Merlin kind of story with the man in the grey suit, something like that. I kept expecting that kind of link. I wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah, but I almost feel like that was kind of
Rosario the Enchanter's story,
because he gave away his magic and then he was immortal after that. Like, you know, he...
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah.
But then you don't know where Prospero or Hector or where the man in the grey suit are from. And you never know, the man in the grey suit is what, Alistair or Alexander? And it's like, that name doesn't fit you. And you don't know actually what the physical appearances are. So I kind of like...
Who are you?
Who are you? I don't see them as old white guys. Almost like if they were wandering around ancient Greece or ancient Rome, I wouldn't be surprised. If they were, you know, back when the pyramids were built.
They're forcing people to put on magic shows for them to the death.
Who has the best Anubis head, you know? Wouldn't be surprised. They're just these ageless creatures.
They're the reason why the Sphinx doesn't have a nose.
Yes! That was part of the game.
Building the pyramids. The
architecture.
Because no one knows where they came from.
No, and then obviously one of them did the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. So, you know, the seven wonders of the ancient world. Yes. That was Hector.
That was part of their
game. The Man in the Grey Suit's original games. This season is architecture. Next season, circus. Yeah. Do you think they've stopped the games? Hector's incorporeal, but...
Yeah, I think they have, because their last round ended in a stalemate. So why would you start another one? Because your last one technically didn't end. I think that's how they ultimately screwed their instructors. Like, screw you guys. You can't have another game, because our game is still going forever.
Yeah, it's kind of like, Prospero, try teaching somebody the pain game when you don't have a body.
Yeah, yeah. How are you going to break their wrist now? You don't have a body. Oh,
God.
Ooh. With magic.
She's grizzly, 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 grizzly.
Yeah. All right.
Is it time?
It's time.
It's time.
Why was it so spooky?
I think
we might be performing magic.
We might be. We can't get spooky until next week.
Magic. Magic.
Oh my god, we're the nerdiest people alive. Okay.
Dear me.
Claire, what's our first question?
We asked on social media, would you rather be part of the circus or a follower of the circus? On Facebook, 100% said part of the circus. On Instagram, 67% said part of the circus and 33% said to follow. On Twitter, 80% said part of the circus and 20% said they would follow. So everybody wants to be Carnifolk.
Yeah, I agree with that. It makes me so sad. Can we just complain about Facebook again? Because getting rid of the poll option on pages has really...
It's kicked.
It has put a,
in the sensitive area.
It has put a damper on a lot of our things.
It's frustrating.
It's terribly frustrating.
I hate votes by emoji.
Yeah, me too.
I hate them. I think they're pointless. I think they're ugly. I never do them myself. If people post them, I'm not bothered for doing that.
Yeah.
there is something to be said for some small amount of anonymity. Even if it's something as silly as, like, as non-committal as a podcast, would you rather circus folk or a follower? But there's something to be said for anonymity.
So let's go ahead and announce it today. We have created a new group on Facebook that is just would you rather questions. As often as we ask you guys to go and do things on social media, we're asking you again right now to find that group and join it so you can answer our would you rather questions and we can have our polls back.
We can share from that group. So you can just click the link and follow it. It's not private. There's no questions. Just you can join.
Yeah.
And once you've joined, you can then vote in the polls.
Yes.
Because unfortunately, that's the way Facebook likes to work. You have to be a part of the group in order to participate in the group.
Which is also terrible because it's a public group. So you should be able to vote on it. But anyway, everyone go and join Would You Rather, a fictional hangover group. And maybe one day Facebook will bring polls back to pages. But until then, we have a group. So everyone go over there and join it. All right.
We'll check some comments.
We can have comments.
At Lord Sock on Twitter said, be part of it, my life is already one.
I'm glad your life is a circus, Lord Sock. Do you have a contortionist?
Next comment.
Colin on Facebook said, I'll be part of the circus, thank you very much. I've been told by many people, including my darling wife, that I have great big carny arms, so should get along famously with all the performers. Plus, I really like chocolate popcorn, so that's a bonus.
And Constance on Facebook said, I want to be part of the circus, but more behind the scenes instead of a performer. The magic of the techie world is what draws me in.
Nice. So she wants to be Marco.
Yeah. Well, or Bailey. She wants the circus.
Yeah.
Or she wants to be the caramel apple seller. Constance the baker. She's the one who makes all of the circus bakes.
Yes.
She weaves her own magic and whimsy into all the apple and popcorns and the cinnamon rolls.
Yes.
I want those cinnamon rolls. I haven't mentioned, but the bit where Widget and Poppet and Bailey have the cinnamon rolls, I was literally salivating and going, I want, I want, I want.
Circus food and fair food is really great. I miss going to state fairs just to get the giant, like, 12 foot, Jesus, that's fucking big, foot long corn dogs.
I love a corn dog, but you can only get them in America. Circuses here aren't as good. It's nasty.
Sorry.
It's nasty. It's greasy, it's nasty.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So what do you say? What are you going to be?
I actually went with follower.
I did too.
Really? Why?
I want to watch it. I want to see all of the stuff. Because if you're a performer, you mean you don't get to go and watch what everyone else is doing. You have to focus on what you're doing. And it's less fun.
Exactly. I was thinking about this. I went, as much fun as it would be to be part of the circus, and I liked Constance's comment to say that you'd be behind the scenes, because I agree with that. I'm a follower because I kind of liken it to this podcast. I don't write books, but I love to talk about them. So it's like, I don't want to be part of the circus, but I want to talk about the circus.
Yeah.
So I can imagine following the circus and being a revere and then going to those meetings and making friends with the people and just talking about them and just feeling like you've got this little special community. And I just really like that idea.
Yeah. Well, we'll be revers together.
Revers. Yes.
And we already are. Look at us.
Yeah, yeah. Have a bit of red, a bit of white.
It's perfect. Okay.
Perfect.
So our second question. We also asked on Facebook because So many people have been talking about this book lately. Have you noticed that? It's been popping up all over the place.
It seems like it's
everywhere. I think we're manipulating things again.
I wouldn't be surprised, but if it's for magical whimsy, I'm all for it.
Yes, indeed. So we asked, would you rather be a living statue or a contortionist? 68% said living statue and 32% said contortionist. Which one did you say?
Contortionist.
Really?
Really?
Why?
I hate living statues.
That's right, you do. You hate them. You've mentioned this
I hate
many,
them.
Many more times in many other episodes.
Oh, they're just... I mean, to be fair, the quality of the living statues that I've seen aren't great. There's a man in York who... I think he's actually got a Facebook page, and he's on a bike. He's on a raised platform in the middle of the cobbled street, on a bike, and he's got it looks like the wind's blowing him, so the coattails are rolling behind, and it's essentially just duct tape.
Oh.
Rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls of duct tape, and it's cheap and nasty looking, and it's cheap and nasty looking spray paint. But the thing is that annoys me the most. They don't stick to it. Like, they're not statues. Now, not like the Night Circus statues where they move so slowly, you can't see them move. You see them changing the positions like a robot, mm-hmm. and I'm like,
no.
I don't like living statues.
That's not right.
So I'd have to be a contortionist. I would love to be that bendy.
Yeah.
I used to be fairly bendy, and then my back broke. But
you're not bendy anymore.
Contortionist. I can barely touch my toes because it's my back.
Well, Candace on Facebook said, I mean, I don't want to have to work. Contortionist seems like a lot of work. If I'm a statue, I can just stand there all quiet and in my head. Like, I agree. I would rather be a living statue. Especially the Night Circus style living statue.
Yeah.
I like it.
You'd be in it for the costumes.
I would be. 100%. Without a doubt.
We also had Constance voting on this one as well, saying, I'm not that bendy. Being a contortionist would not end well for me. Fair. I like to think, though, if I'm going to be a professional contortionist in a circus, I've had some amount of training. And if I'm going to be a Sakiko tight contortionist, I'm fine. I've got magic.
That's true.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Next question. Would you rather have Isabel tell you your future with the tarot cards or pop it with the stars?
They're both kind of ambiguous, huh?
It's telling the future, they're always going to be ambiguous.
Yeah. If we learned anything from Alice Cullen, somebody's manipulating the future. Just...
Don't bet against Alice, though.
No, never bet against Alice. Like, I'm kind of leaning... I've got reasons for both of them. Like, Poppet seeing the future in the stars. Like, I feel like the stars know. Because the stars have been there forever. So they know. They know what's up. They've already seen it because they're light years away. So they know what's going to happen.
Okay.
But with the tarot cards, I feel like I would change my future to make it fit the cards. So, I don't know.
You're saying there, though, that the stars are more accurate than the tarot. Because the tarot will influence your decisions, whereas the stars...
The stars know.
It's predetermination.
Yeah.
See, I'm going with Poppet and the stars, just because I love Poppet so much.
Yeah. And Isabel's
and
kind
like
of
the
a jerk.
Idea. Oh, she's a total jerk. And... she's another one who doesn't need a man. She needs to learn to live by herself.
She needs to make a hair bracelet out of her own hair. Only her own hair.
She needs to just not make a hair bracelet, because that's just creepy.
I think I'm going to go with Poppet as well. I'm going to trust the stars.
Yeah. There's a romanticism and a whimsy about the stars better than, like, more so than the tarot cards.
Yeah. Plus, I trust Poppet more than I trust Isabel.
Exactly. I would think Isabel has, like, an underlying agenda.
Yeah, she's got an ulterior motive.
Yeah. Whereas Poppet is... I mean, she's still so young. I mean, what, does it end when she's about 16? Something like that?
Yeah.
She's still young. She's not naive by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. But I don't think she'll lead you down the wrong path purposefully. Yeah.
Let's trust Poppet.
Yes. Plus she's got fabulous hair.
She does.
And kittens.
Yeah.
She might let you hold the kittens while she reads the story.
I hope so. Would you rather get lost in the labyrinth or the cloud maze?
Cloud maze? Because the labyrinth seemed a bit like it could be a bit terrifying. Like the way you're being locked in a cage and things.
Yeah.
At least with the cloud maze, you can exit pretty much at any time by jumping off the cloud.
Would you jump off a cloud?
That's how you have to get out, so I guess I would. I'd scream the entire time and I'd protest loudly. If you kick, you know, I might kick someone. but I kind of like... I mean, don't get me wrong. I haven't jumped out of a perfectly sensible plane and piece of plastic to parachute me down. That seems insane to me. But then there's also a matter of false perspective. I could possibly trick my head into thinking that if I'm jumping from the cloud in the cloud maze, I'm only like 2 feet off the ground, really.
I guess.
Whimsy.
Magic and whimsy. That's all that matters. Magic and whimsy.
That's all I'm saying is magic and whimsy. I don't know. I just feel like I'd feel a bit more safer in the cloud maze because it doesn't seem as closed in and scary. And if Poppet and Widget were with me and they jumped off the side of the cloud, I would trust them and go with them.
I'm really surprised that you didn't say the labyrinth because I feel like the labyrinth is like an escape room. And I feel like you're very good at escape rooms. I feel like you could get yourself out.
I have done a few escape rooms. We have successfully gotten out.
I'm going to go with the labyrinth just because I have, you know, a dreaded, terrible fear of heights.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in the cloud.
The only problem I have with labyrinths as well...
The Minotaur?
Is... Yeah.
Yeah, we know how you feel about the Minotaur.
I seem to have a lot of strong feelings about lots of different things.
Yes.
Okay, and they're all on the internet.
Yes, they are. And you can watch her complaining about the Minotaur in our live video. Because that's when we talked about it. Yes. I didn't pick the Minotaur then either because we wouldn't be able to fit through the doorways. What? Oh yeah, but I'm gonna go with the labyrinth. I feel like I would like to solve a puzzle more than I would like to plummet to my death. Even though you don't die, magic and whimsy.
I was gonna say I'm not planning on dying.
Magic and whimsy.
Oh my goodness, magic and whimsy.
Still, I'd like to solve a puzzle. So if I have to find a key to get out, that's what I'm gonna do.
The thing is, though, I mean, the finding the key to get out, it was like, you just search the place. It's not exactly like following the clues.
Yeah, and that, also, the labyrinth was, like, kind of broken then.
Exactly. It's arbitrary. And that was the scary thing. I suppose that if the cloud maze is broken, you are falling to your death. Either way, it's not good.
Yeah.
Can I go to the ice garden instead?
Sure. Sure. You go to the ice garden instead. And I'll still wander around the labyrinth.
No, I'm going to the cinnamon bun stall. And then I'm going to sit in front of the bonfire and get warm.
You're going to get
eating my cinnamon.
You're going to get lost in cinnamon buns. Okay.
Oh, yeah. That sounds delightful.
Yes. Okay. Very
good. Okay, last question. Would you rather learn magic from the man in the grey suit or Prospero the Enchanter?
I'm going to go with the man in the gray suit. Because I mentioned earlier, I like the idea of having spells and things and books and, you know, all of that stuff. Also, I don't want to have to cut my fingertips every day and magically heal them.
I don't want to be physically abused like he did with Celia, like starving her so she was more wraith-like.
Yeah.
And cutting her fingers and breaking her wrists and... No. And yeah, I'd rather be surrounded. I'd rather be neglected and just be given a pile of books to learn from. So yeah, as horrible as the man in the grey suit seems to be as well. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, he's less terrible.
Yeah?
I guess.
I mean, he doesn't kick him out until he's mature age to live by himself. So, you know, it's not as if...
He did set him up with a good job, too.
Set him with a house, a flat, set him up with a job. He is effectively taking care of Marco, just from a distance.
Yeah. So he's slightly less terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Let's learn magic for the man in the grist.
Yes, let's
buy a books.
Yes, let's do.
Let's get some book learning in.
Yes. We don't have enough of that going on in our lives already.
We need some more magic and whimsy.
We do. All right. So, do you have a favorite final thought quote?
Got two.
You have two?
I've got two.
What did we say last time? One for fun? Do you have one for fun?
One for fun. I've got one for fun. As soon as I read it, I was like, this is my one for fun. My one for fun is, who doesn't like a good cake analogy?
That's very good. That's very good.
And I think my more sensible life lesson final quote, people don't pay much attention to anything unless you give them reason to. And that's objects, situations, people.
Yeah.
It's horrible, it's scary, but people need a reason to pay attention.
Yeah. I have so many that I picked. I need to whittle them down. I don't have a one for fun this time, though.
Oh, me.
I know.
Mine involved cake. Of course I'm going to have it in there.
Yeah. I like this one quite a bit. There are never really endings, happy or otherwise. Things keep going on. They overlap and blur. Your story is part of many other stories, and there's no telling where any of them may lead. I like that one.
I like that one. Yeah.
Whimsy.
All right.
Sorry, you just have to have a whimsy time again.
We just... it's amazing how much this book just makes you want to sit and go...
Yeah. All right. If you liked this, try this. Do you have any suggestions?
I've gone down the magic and whimsy route.
Well, we like that. What do you have?
Exactly. Sorry, I've gone down the magic and whimsy route rather than the circus route. Because, it's what got me in the feels. And I adore this book. And it's Stardust by Neil Gaiman. I love it.
Yeah.
So the summary, as per Goodreads, life moves at a leisurely pace in the tiny town of Wall, named after the imposing stone barrier which separates the town from a grassy meadow. Here, young Tristan Thorne has lost his heart to the beautiful Victoria Forrester, and for the coveted prize of her hand, Tristan vows to retrieve a fallen star and deliver it to his beloved. It is an oath that sends him over the ancient wall and into a world that is dangerous and strange beyond imagining. Magic and whimsy.
Nothing says I love you like the gift of an injured woman.
Well, give Tristan the poor soul the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't realise it's an injured woman when he goes on his quest.
Oh, that's good.
I love the ghosts.
Yeah.
They make me laugh.
I love everything about that book and its accompanying movie.
Yes, I adore the movie as well. The two very, very different things, but they are both wonderful.
Yes.
What about you? Have you got a recommendation?
Well, I do, and I feel like I've complained about this in the past. And I've said, come on, Claire, don't go and pick something we've already talked about.
You've picked something we've already covered?
Well, I picked something that I've already covered.
This is not a loophole. You're still getting the stink eye.
I know, I'm sorry. And it's a good story, though, and it ties so well into the Night Circus, and there are so many things that are similar between the two. So I feel like if you haven't read Caraval by Stephanie Garber, you need to go and read it. We did cover it way back a long time ago in episode 30. But I just gotta say, just stop with Caraval. Don't read the other two, because they're not good. That's just me and my own personal beliefs. But Caraval was fine on its own. Scarlet Dragna has never left the tiny island where she and her sister Tella live with their powerful and cruel father. Now, Scarlet's father has arranged a marriage for her, and Scarlet thinks her dreams of seeing Caraval, the faraway once-a-year performance where the audience participates in the show, are over. But this year, Scarlet's long-dreamt-of invitation finally arrives. With the help of a mysterious sailor, Tella whisks Scarlet away to the show. Only, as they arrive, Tella is kidnapped by Caraval's mastermind organizer, Legend. It turns out that this season's Caraval revolves around Tella, and whoever finds her first is the winner. Scarlet has been told that everything that happens during Caraval is only an elaborate performance. Nevertheless, she becomes enmeshed in a game of love, heartbreak, and magic. Read the first one. Don't read the other two.
Magic and whimsy?
Magic and whimsy in the first one. And then it just goes...
Can you spell that for me? Sorry, I need to write that down for the review.
There's lots of P's, some L's. I think that's all it is. Now I need to wipe off my monitor. Spit everywhere.
Say it, don't spray it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear me.
Oh my gosh. That's it.
I know.
That's it for this episode and season. A Fictional Hangover. Oh my gosh. 2 full years of Fictional Hangover. Wow.
Is this where you tell everybody that you get a new co-host for the new season?
I hope not. Don't leave me.
Hey, I've started writing the summaries for the books that are coming. I'm sticking around. We've got some good things ahead.
Thank goodness.
You're not getting rid of me anytime soon.
Thank goodness. All right. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we begin season 3 and discuss Horror Store by Grady Hendrix. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook, and be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangove.redbubble.com. That's fictionalhangove.redbubble.com to find all your favorite Fictional Hangover-themed merchandise. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.